silence of the cabin, and I lie very still, trying to wrap my head around the future she proposed in front of the fire earlier this evening. A life at college together, a small house with a white fence and a little yard for Nipper, a room that gets the afternoon light, filled with stacks of sheet music, a worn old upright piano by the window and photos of us on the walls, a small kitchen where we learn how to feed ourselves without setting fire to the pots and pans, a bedroom that we share together, where we fall asleep, tangled up in each other's bodies every night, no matter what. It sounds peaceful. It sounds magical. It sounds like a fucking dream, and that scares the living shit out of me. None of the tragic events that I've endured since I was born came about because my existence is ill-fated. My mother was a troubled woman, plagued by depression and manic swings that made her life unbearable. Giacomo left because he was weak. Ben died. Fuck. I screw my eyes shut tight against the darkness, allowing the pain that comes crashing down on me a moment to settle. The teeth of Ben's loss are still so sharp, they're probably never going to dull. They're impossible to avoid, though. They bite down hard and deep. All I can do is brace myself and wait for the breathlessness they cause to pass. Ben died because a deer leapt out in front of the car when Jackie was driving, and there was no time for her to react. There were reasons for these tragedies. I'm the common factor in all of these events, though, which makes it difficult to convince myself that I'm not the reason why everything keeps falling apart over and over again. And when those thoughts creep in, poisoning my mind like they are tonight, refusing to let me sleep, fear gets the better of me. If I dream of a beautiful life with Silver, I'm gonna fucking jinx it. There won't be a little house with a music room for us. There won't be a little yard for Nipper. Silver will go away just like everyone else has gone away, and I'll be left all alone. She loves you, Alex. She isn't going anywhere. She's here, you fucking moron. She's here. The words I repeat in my head like a prayer should reassure me, but they don't. Because there's another voice, not quite as loud, but far more insidious, whispering inside my ear at the same time. Yeah, yeah, she is. But for how fucking long? Whoa, man, what the fuck is that? Didn't know they made jock straps in extra small. Monday morning brings with it a hail of fresh snow and yet another indoor practice session for the newly named Raleigh Rebels. I'm half-dressed and glowering at the inside of my locker, wondering why the fuck I'm still doing this to myself, when Xander appears out of the showers, towel wrapped around his waist, scrubbing a smaller towel through his wet hair. He lunges forward, grinning like a moron, attempting to flick my boxed-up junk. But I give him a look so evil that even he can't mistake the warning. Do it. Go on, try. I will fucking kill you. Whoa now, Susan. He dances back a couple of steps, putting himself out of reach. No need for any of that. Someone got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning. Fuck off, Hawk. I'm not in the mood. Yeah. He props himself up against the lockers, crossing his arms over his chest, his eyes scanning me from head to toe. Yeah, I can see that, he muses. Your pretty girlfriend not putting out or something? I slam my locker door, growling low in my throat. Don't you fucking dare. Okay, okay, man, fuck, calm yourself. Calm isn't on the agenda today. Grabbing my gear, I turn away, showing Xander my back. Something he explicitly taught me not to do in juvie. Showing someone your back in an environment like that is way worse than shoving your middle finger in their face. It means you don't respect them, don't consider them a threat. And while Xander is most definitely a threat, what with his close ties to Giacomo, I sure as fuck don't respect the bastard. I set my shoulder pads down on the bench, flaring my nostrils as I wrestle the brand new jersey Coach Foley tossed at me when I entered the change rooms over the hard plastic. Hold up. What the fuck is that? You're still pissed about your dad, and I get it, Alex. I should have fucking told you that I knew him. I bend at the waist, squinting at the jersey material that's half stretched over my pads, as if narrowing my eyes at it is somehow going to make the small embroidered patch on the right-hand shoulder disappear.
You need to stop being such an asshole, Alex. When are you going to let bygones be bygones?
You still working for money? I ask distractedly.
Wouldn't be here if I wasn't, he replies.
You still mixed up with the dreadnoughts?
What do you think?
Then you're still mixed up with Giacomo. I'm not interested being friends with my father's fucking spy. I yank the football jersey off of my shoulder pads and shove past Xander, forcing a path through the other guys who are getting ready for practice, heading for Coach Foley's office.
You don't just walk away from the dreadnoughts, asshole,
Xander calls after me.
Don't be such a shit, Alex.
I knock on Coach Foley's door, waiting a second before pushing it open. Inside the small office, still crowded with Coach Quinton's trophies, framed awards, and weird bobblehead knickknacks, Coach Foley sits behind the desk, scribbling furiously onto a gameplay whiteboard. She looks up at me and rolls her eyes dramatically.
Laura, don't start. Just say thank you and move on.
Thank you? Thank you. I wave the jersey in the air, scowling at the captain patch that's stitched onto the fucking sleeve. I'm not team captain. I'm barely on the damn team. Coach Foley groans, slowly capping her whiteboard marker and setting it down on the desk. She leans back in her chair, her expression displeased.
You are Captain Moretti. I made you captain.
You can't do that. I didn't apply for it. None of the other guys voted me in.
Ha! Ha ha ha!
Coach Foley's fake laughter is loaded with sarcasm.
Oh, poor kid. You seem to be under the illusion that we have some sort of high school football democracy going on here. There is no application process. The shit for brains douchebags out there in that locker room don't get a goddamn vote. I decide what the team's called. I decide who captains the team. I decide when you morons eat, shit, sleep, and fart. Now go finish getting ready. If you boys aren't in the gym in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to adjust the thermostat and make you all shower in cold water.
She picks her marker back up and returns to her game plays. I don't budge. Coach Foley sighs loudly when I take a step toward her desk, dropping the shirt in front of her. You can't just force this on me. I don't have the time. Plus, in case you missed it, I really don't give a shit about this team. You're better off picking someone else.
You will give a shit about this team, Foley fires back. You'll care very much when we start winning games and people notice you. You're late to the game, Alex. Literally. Any player here worth their salt has been made a scholarship offer. It's February. Your high school career ends in approximately 5 months. A good football player is going to have a hard time finding a place at a college at this late stage.
You're going to have to be excellent if you want a scout to notice you now.
What?
What makes you think I want a football scholarship? Coach Foley spreads her fingers, showing me her palms. She's acting as if she's exasperated, but shit, she doesn't get to be annoyed. I'm the one who's annoyed.
Your grades are amazing, kid. Don't get me wrong. Somehow, amidst the knee-deep horseshit you've been wading through since you enrolled at this school, you've come out of the other side academically smelling of roses. But your criminal record? That stinks like dog shit. Honestly, I couldn't quite believe half the crap in your file when I flicked through it the other day. Your grades alone aren't going to be enough to secure you a place at college, and I think it'd be a shame to waste...
I shake my head, trying in vain to understand what the hell is going on here. Aren't you, like, a substitute? Coach Foley smiles.
I sure am. See? Proof. You are one of the bright ones.
You don't need to waste your energy on me, okay? I'm sure you have other things to worry about. I've got my shit handled.
That why you were fighting with the other new kid last practice?
She asked.
Because you've got your shit handled?
I was fighting with him because he's annoying.
God damn it. I shouldn't have to tell her this.
If she's so fucking observant, then she must have noticed that all by herself.
The woman behind the desk laughs softly under her breath. I'm not trying to interfere in your life, Alex, but it's my job to help you kids out where I can, right?
No, it's your job to teach us how to play football. Coach Foley beams at me, rocking back in her chair.
Excellent. That's exactly what I'm doing. Your team captain until I say otherwise. Now, if you don't mind, I have some things to take care of before we kick things off, and we're both running out of time.
I don't think you're hearing me.
I don't think you're hearing me, Mr. Moretti. This is non-negotiable. Principal Darhauer wants you booted from Raleigh. You're an annoying reminder that Jim's star pupil turned out to be an ugly shit stain on the school's shining reputation. If he could get rid of Silver, don't think for a second he wouldn't. But she's a model student. Now people know what she's been through. Folk in this town would revolt if she was suddenly no longer welcome here. Darhauer's hands are tied. You, however, you're an unknown entity covered in tattoos, and you shot someone for Christ's sake.
Jake, I shot Jake because he was about to hang.
You think any of that shit matters? Really? You could have shot Pol fucking Pot, and it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference. 1 foot wrong, and your days at Raleigh High come to an abrupt end. That's just how it is. So you get to be captain of the Rebels, and you get to shine on the field and in the classroom, and you get to make me look good by doing it with a smile on that handsome face of yours. Whether you meant to or not, you ousted the last king of Raleigh High. Now you've got to fill his shoes. Or you've got to start thinking about all of the amazing jobs you'll be eligible for once you've dropped out and gotten a fucking GED instead of graduating. Now go and put that uniform on. It feels like I'm walking to the gallows when I enter the gym. 28 pairs of eyes bore into me, some of them resentful, some of them confused, some of them outright incredulous. I wanted to keep myself occupied when I decided to rejoin the team. Keeping my mind busy meant less time for me to brood and stew over Ben. I wasn't looking for this kind of responsibility, though. Most of the team worshipped Jake like he was a god amongst men. They rallied around him, spending the night outside the hospital, boycotting his arrest after he tried to kill Silver. I put a bullet in their glorious leader, and not a single one of them looks impressed by the fact that I've now stolen his role as team captain. Well, actually, that's not true. One player seems amused by this bizarre turn of events.
Hope you've got health insurance, bro, Xander says, slapping me roughly on the back. I'm gonna say the odds of you making it out of this practice session alive are pretty low.
Xander's been really, really fucking wrong in the past. He was just about as wrong as he could be when he made the call not to tell me about his connection to my father. This time, though, it kinda looks like he might be right.
He grins his frustrating grin at me through the grill of his helmet.
After you've been such an outrageous prick, I should let the wolves have at you, Moretti. Don't sweat it, though. I got your back.
20. Silver. Oh my God, what happened to your face? The library's closed at lunch for some kind of faculty meeting, so I've reluctantly had to settle on eating in the cafeteria. I nearly topple off my chair when I spot Alex walking across the loud cafeteria with a loaded tray in his hand and a vivid, massive purple bruise developing on his jaw. He grimaces as he sets down his tray on the table, seating himself opposite me. Before he can explain how he ended up with such a huge welt on the side of his face, Xander arrives dressed in a ridiculous preppy sweater and chinos, brandishing a tray of his own. He sets it down next to Alex's, and my jaw drops even lower when I see the black eye and the split lip he's sporting.
The football team tried to dethrone their new ruler, he says, his tone way too chipper given that his lower lip is still oozing blood. They don't seem to like him for some reason, he adds. God knows why.
I drop my plastic fork, slumping back into my chair. Alex's expression confirms Xander's outlandish comment. Yes, he really has been made captain of the football team. You've got to be kidding me.
Coach Foley is insane.
Alex glares down at the enormous mountain of food in front of him.
She said it was the only way I was getting accepted into college. Clearly, she wants me dead, though.
Wow. Just wow. Hey, Silver. Alex. New guy, whoever you are. Mind if I sit with you?
Suddenly, Halliday's standing next to me, clasping a brown paper bag in her hands, looking a little anxious as she eyes the open space on the bench next to me. A moment of uncomfortable silence hangs in the air where I just stare up at her, so stunned that my brain ceases to function. When that moment becomes too uncomfortable to bear, I snap out of my daze and shunt over on the bench, making room for her.
Sure, yeah. Why not?
She exhales, her shoulders relaxing, and I realize that she was nervous. She thought I was going to say no.
Cool, thanks.
She sits, unwrapping her lunch, and Alex's dark gaze punches holes in the side of her face the entire time. I kick him under the table. When he looks at me, my meaningful stare passes along a stern message. Hey, be nice.
It's okay. You don't need to rein him in, Halliday says quietly.
Damn it, I didn't think I was being that obvious.
I was fucking horrible to you, Silver.
Halliday struggles with the words. Her guilt feels like a fifth member of the group, looming over our table, demanding all of the space and leaving none for the rest of us.
I was a bad person. I know that. Things should never have gone the way they did. Casey was, well, she was Casey. And I was so selfish. I let myself fear her more than I loved you. And that was...
Her eyes are shining, and the end of her nose has gone pink. I know from experience that it only ever does that when she's about to cry. She didn't apologize for the way she treated me when she asked if I would visit Zen at the hospital with her. I didn't expect her to, somehow. When she spins to face me, remorse all over her face, her hands fiddling fretfully with the tassel on the zip of her purse, and she says the words,
I'm so sorry, Silver. I know saying sorry's never going to be enough to make up for the way I was, but I am, okay? I'm really sorry. And I missed you. I missed my friend. I don't deserve it, but I hope we'll be able to be friends again. Proper friends. The way we should have been before.
I find that I can't bear the sincerity or the cautious hope flickering in her eyes. I want to run away from it all as fast as humanly possible and pretend that it isn't even happening.
It's okay. It's fine, Hal. You don't need to apologize.
Like hell she doesn't, Alex growls, stabbing his fork in her direction. She loved you. She trusted you, and you let every single person in this school believe she lied about being raped when you knew for a fact that it was true. You could have told the truth. At least some of the assholes in the school might have given her story credence if you'd come forward and told Darhauer what you saw that night.
A pit of agony burns in the center of my chest, spreading out, 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 making it hard to breathe. I love Alex for what he's doing. He's standing up for me when no one else would, and I could hug him for it. But I also really, really need him to stop. I can't do this now. I can't do this here.
Alex, no, he's right, Halliday says, nodding firmly. I know what I did was worse than Zen and Melody. I found you covered in blood. I saw the state you were in. My statement could have made a difference, but I was a coward. It's a little late, but I'm figuring out how not to be a coward now. High school makes us into the worst versions of ourselves, but I'm trying to do better.
I say you forgive her, Xander says cheerily, popping a fry into his mouth. Looks like she means it, and she's so pretty. I hate to see a pretty girl cry.
Alex pivots on the bench, glaring at the guy sitting next to him.
Why can't you ever just shut the fuck up, dude? For real, this has nothing to do with you.
Halliday looks like she wants to crawl under the table and die quietly, where no one will be able to see the life wilt out of her.
I get where Alex is coming from. I'm not going to be able to just snap my fingers and forget everything that's happened since Jake dragged me into that bathroom. I'll never be able to forget it. But I think I will be able to forgive Hal. Maybe not today, or tomorrow, or next week even. But a day will come, probably soon, when I don't look at her and only see all of the times she sneered at me over Casey's shoulder as the sirens shoved past me in the hallway. I'll see the silly, quirky, sweet girl I used to burn around Raleigh in the Nova with. I'll be reminded of all the good times we've had, instead of all the painful, sad, angry moments.
and the hurt of the past year will eventually soften. Until then, I'm willing to try. I catch Alex looking at me in my peripherals, and I know he's worrying about me. This is a lot, after all. He's seen me at my worst. He's held the pieces of me together when I've fallen apart, and some of that heartbreak was Halliday's fault. I'm not used to having someone look out for me, and it's making my eyes prick like crazy. How about we just focus on the fact that you're the captain of the football team now, I say, clumsily changing the subject. Finesse has never been my strong suit. The less time we sit here, stewing in tension and guilt, however, the better. Halliday smiles meekly at me. A silent thank you for taking the pressure off her. From the smug smirk on his face, Xander's perfectly happy to divert the course of our conversation in Alex's direction. I can already tell that the guy has plenty to say about Alex's new role and can't wait to aggravate him some more. Alex, on the other hand, plunges the tines of his fork into his lasagna and spits out a string of curse words so colorful that the nerds sitting at the table next to us all trade terrified looks. I don't blame them. Alex is an intimidating guy even when he's silent, expressionless, and minding his own business. Irritated and giving his emotion free rein, my beautiful boyfriend is so savage and menacing that it's a miracle the nerds don't pack up their laptops and flee the cafeteria like a flock of startled lemmings.
I broke Travis McCormick's middle finger, he states icily. You should have seen it, Xander chuckles. The moron thought he could take on our boy all by himself. He was stupid enough to flip Alex the bird, and then, crack! Xander mimes something, snapping in two. Fingers aren't supposed to stick out at a 90-degree angle. I haven't seen anything that gross in a while.
And then he smacked you in the face? That's where you got the bruise? I ask. Alex looks over my shoulder at the wall behind me. When I duck to the left, attempting to make eye contact with him, he shakes his head, looking up, suddenly intrigued by the paint job on the ceiling.
No, that was from after.
His voice is too light, too airy. Clearly, he's trying to skirt around a piece of information that he doesn't want to part with. Unluckily for him, Xander's all too happy to fill in the blanks.
Kyle, Lawrence, and Nassim tried to take him down and stamp on his head when Coach Foley left to take a call. One of them landed a punch. Kyle? I think it was the Kyle kid. That's when I jumped in and joined in the party.
Yeah, you didn't need to. I had the situation under control.
You really did, Xander says around a mouthful of burger. He punched Lawrence so hard the fucker's probably still seeing stars. Hey man, can you shoot me over that ketchup?
Alex grumpily snatches up the bottle of tomato ketchup and slams it down in front of Xander. The guy looks a little surprised, like he was expecting Alex to tell him to go fuck himself.
Thanks. Anyway, he cracked Lawrence's head so hard, I think his helmet split in two. And that Nassim kid looked like he was about to run crying out of the gym when Alex dodged his right hook and kicked his knees out from underneath him. I would have left Alex to take care of them by himself, but then three other assholes started throwing their weight around, and I decided to lend a hand. One against three is pretty manageable odds. One against six? Even you're not that good, Moretti.
Alex and Xander have a unique relationship. I say relationship because friendship just doesn't feel right. Alex lets Xander speak to him in a way that would have him ripping someone else's arm off, no doubt about it. He also looks like he's on the verge of beating Xander within an inch of his life at other times, too. Their dynamic's so complicated that I feel like I'm suffering from whiplash whenever the two of them are together. Alex pulls a face, shoving his tray away, his food stabbed at, poked and prodded, but otherwise untouched.
You should have let them kick my ass, he says grimly. Break a few bones. That way Foley wouldn't be able to force the captain's badge on me.
Xander closely inspects a fry, holding it up to the light like it might contain some secret hidden message inside of it.
Friends don't let friends get the crap kicked out of them, homie. Unless they're being released from juvie and you don't want to suffer through a bullshit emotional goodbye with them. In that situation, it's perfectly acceptable to bribe another inmate to lynch them unexpectedly. So said friend doesn't want to speak to you ever again.
Alex rolls his eyes. Next to me, Halliday opens up the brown paper bag she brought with her to the table, gingerly offering it out to me. I already know what's inside. The smell hits me before I manage to take a peek. Halliday always used to make lemon bars for her brother's bake sales. Three or four times a year, I'd show up randomly at her place, conveniently, just in the area, and Halliday would have to make an extra batch of lemon bars to replace the ones that I inhaled. She must have planned out coming to sit with me today. She labored in her kitchen last night to make these, and the whole time she must have been freaking out about what I was going to say to her. She probably pictured me grabbing a lemon bar and smashing it into her face, soap opera style. She has an overactive imagination like that. I take one from the paper bag, giving her a small smile in return. Okay, so this feels weird and not entirely uncomfortable, but as I look around the cafeteria, I notice something remarkable. People are talking to one another, laughing over memes, gesticulating wildly as they laugh and chatter. They're all engrossed in their conversations and their late math assignments and their crush that's sitting on the other side of the room. None of them are looking at me. For the first time in a very long time, I, Silver Parisi, am not sitting on the outside looking in. I'm just another random student at Raleigh High, and that feels fucking incredible.
This is nice, Xander says, winking at me from across the table. You and Blondie are sharing sugar. Alex hasn't tried to kill me in well over 5 minutes. I don't want to get ahead of myself over here, but I go so far as to call this progress.
21. Alex. Monty. Come by the bar tonight. This doesn't need to be a thing, kid. The first night I worked at The Rock, I was shown how to clear the waitress's stations. I was shown how to operate the POS and ring in orders. The bartenders gave me the lowdown, explaining how they'd tip me out well if I herded people to drink at the bar instead of the floor sections. And at the end of the night, after busting my ass, making sure I did exactly what I was told, Monty ushered me into his office, where a bald guy with a mustache was lying unconscious on the floor in a pool of his own blood, and he educated me on what my job would involve after the bar had closed and the punters had all left for the night. I was to be the errand boy, the bag man. I was also the guy who did most of the heavy lifting. Turned out the guy with the mustache was missing a couple of fingers thanks to a pair of pliers Monty kept in the top drawer of his desk. As he sat behind a bank of screens, scrolling through security footage, he lit up a cigarette and tasked me with collecting up the guy's dismembered fingers and putting them in a Ziploc baggie filled with ice. Couldn't do as he was told, he'd said, blowing a smoke ring and then poking his fingers through the middle of it. Mac here knows he's supposed to make a drop on Tuesday. If he doesn't make a drop on Tuesday, we run low on product for the rest of the week. I don't want to be scrambling to keep customers happy just because one of my employees can't follow simple instructions or get up off his lazy ass to do his fucking job. You understand, right, kid? At the time, I nodded, kept my mouth shut, and put Mac's fucking finger into the Ziploc without flinching. I recognized the situation for what it was, a test. Monty had wanted to apply a bit of pressure to see how I'd react to the sight of such flagrant blood and violence. What he hadn't realized was that I'd used that evening as a fact-finding mission, too. I learned a lot as I listened to him talk. Monty reached down into hell and plucked me out of the darkness. He saved me from being assigned to yet another shitty foster care situation that was bound to go bad, and I was seriously fucking grateful for that. But I quickly discovered that he had a vindictive side. He didn't like being disobeyed, and he didn't like the people he considered his property acting like they had a mind of their own. When someone did that, and inevitably ended in bloodshed. Almost immediately, Monty established himself as an unforgiving benefactor whose punishments were nothing short of swift and ruthless. It's with this knowledge in mind that I formulate a three-word response to Monty's text, one that I know is going to irritate the hell out of him. No fucking way. I like my fingers. I like the way they're attached to my fucking hands. I need them to play guitar and make Silver come. And I didn't just forget to make a run on a Tuesday. I handed a bag that was very precious to Monty over to a man who Monty apparently hates. God knows what was really in that stupid fucking bag, or why half the criminals in the state of Washington were trying to get their hands on it. Honestly, I don't even think Monty knew what was so valuable about it. He just knew that everyone else wanted it, and he was willing to do whatever it took to make sure he got it before anyone else could. I fucked up his entire power play, and for that, Monty's gonna want my head on a stick. He can tell me this doesn't need to be a thing as many times as he likes. This is most definitely a thing for him. And if I'm stupid enough to step foot inside his office, I might as well resign myself to the fact that I won't be leaving with the same number of appendages that I walked in with. My cell buzzes in my pocket again as I hurry down Main Street, hiking the strap of my gig bag a little higher on my shoulder. I'm not interested in Monty's response, but I check the phone anyway, more out of habit than anything else. Silver.
You nearly here? I'm 2 seconds from walking out.
I smirk to myself, imagining the anxious look on her face. She makes a point of radiating this unstoppable, self-possessed, fierce attitude all the time. But every now and then I get to see an uncertain side of her, and it's frankly fucking adorable. It makes me want to wrap her in cotton wool and protect her. Me. Arriving any second. Cold feet? She replies immediately. Silver.
Frozen.
When I enter the diner, rushing in out of the cold, the bell above the door jangles, announcing the arrival of a new customer to the 5 or 6 people seated in the booths. Silver looks up from her phone screen, her nerves giving over to relief when she sets eyes on me. The black Billy Joel t-shirt she's wearing looks new. I don't think I've seen it before. Her thick, gorgeous hair is down for once. She's wearing a touch of makeup, too. Just a little lip gloss and some mascara. Evidently, she made an effort to look presentable before she left the house, which makes me feel shitty since I definitely did not. The ripped jeans and the plain black t-shirt I snagged from my clean laundry pile 2 seconds before I ran out of the apartment just now have seen better days, and my zip-up hoodie has gotten so thin that it barely counts as an extra layer of clothing. For the first time, I regret not making more of an effort to look good for a girl. I make a mental note to order some new threads online. It'd be quicker and easier to just bite the bullet and head to Bellingham to pick some stuff up from a store, but fuck that noise. Shopping makes me break out in hives.
Hey.
Silver slides over in the booth, chewing on her thumbnail. I dump my guitar on the opposite bench next to hers, then sit my ass down beside her, taking hold of her wrist and forcefully guiding her hand away from her mouth. They serve food here, you know. No need to resort to autosarcophagy.
What the hell's autosarcophagy?
Self-cannibalism? People are weird as fuck. Silver whimpers, grimacing as she slumps against me, hiding her face against my chest.
I think I have tennis elbow,
she groans. Running a hand over the back of her head, petting her, I disguise my smile in the waves of her hair. No, you don't.
Yeah, I do,
she argues. Try again, Argento. She pinches my side, growling like a feral tiger cub.
Fine. Mom asked me to look after Max. Sounded important. If I don't head over to her place now, she's probably gonna lose her job.
You really think I don't know your mom's still in Toronto? You can quit mumbling weak excuses into my t-shirt. They aren't gonna get you anywhere. We told Cam we'd do this, so we're doing it. End of story. Across the other side of the diner, Harry spies us sitting in the booth and waves, beaming from ear to ear. He makes a beeline for us, carrying a gargantuan basket of fries. This is gonna be great, kids, he says, setting down the food. We haven't had live music here since Wesley Daniels quit playing the harmonica on account of his asthma. I like Harry. He's the kind of guy to include me when he calls a group of teenagers kids. It makes me feel wholesome, which is really fucking entertaining. Wholesome is something I have never been. He'd probably come up with another less generous name for me if he knew the fucked up, dark shit that goes on in my head. Or the fucked up dark shit I do to the sweet, innocent-looking girls sitting next to me in the booth, for that matter. I reward his endearing naivety by giving him a genuine smile. We're honored that you'd have us.
Actually, Harry, I'm so sorry to do this to you, but I'm not feeling well.
I clamp my hand over Silver's mouth, widening my smile. Don't listen to a word that comes out of her mouth. Silver's been stuck down by a bout of nerves. She's gonna be fine once she gets up there and starts playing. Silver groans through my fingers, which makes Harry frown worriedly.
You sure? I mean, you don't have to play if you don't want to. It's not a problem. If you don't think you can do it, the jukebox is fine.
I'm not planning on uncovering Silver's mouth, but she sticks her tongue out, wetting my hand, and it feels fucking gross, so I release her.
Parisi, I warn. What's the big deal? You've played for me before. Your students, too. There's no one here.
She casts uncertain eyes around the diner, nervously plucking at the hem of her t-shirt. Finally, she adopts a resigned expression, snagging a fry from the basket in front of us and shoving it into her mouth.
Fine, I'll play. But if I smash all of these fries and then throw up all over the stage, I will not be held accountable.
Harry accepts her terms surprisingly quickly.
You're a star, Silver. Your dad's gonna be so proud.
No, you didn't invite him.
Of course I did. He's your biggest fan, sweetheart. I also told Heather and Deborah from the wool shop, and Ms. Jones from the school said she'd try to pop by. I know a couple of folk are still busy with work and whatnot, but I'm expecting quite the crowd after 5. I have some Pepto in the back if you need it.
He makes a sharp exit from the table, leaving before Silver can change her mind. She shoots daggers at me, feigning annoyance, but I know the truth. The prospect of playing in front of a large group of people is terrifying the shit out of her.
How the fuck are you not freaking out right now?
She demands sulkily, jamming another fry into her mouth. I don't give a fuck about any of these people. I could give 2 shits if they like me or my playing. This is a low-stakes game. The only person's opinion that matters to me is yours. And I've already played for you. As far as I'm concerned, these bastards can all go fuck themselves. She thinks about this for a second.
So, you don't care what my dad thinks? His opinion of you isn't important to you? Not even a teeny, tiny bit?
Okay, so she has me there. I guess I care about Cam's opinion. Just a teeny, tiny bit. I don't like admitting it, though. Shrugging, I plant a kiss against her temple, humming. I suppose it'd suck a little if you thought I was a hack. Won't stop me from getting up there and playing, though, Argento. Leaning down a little so that my mouth is right next to her ear, I whisper my next words carefully. If I suffered from performance anxiety, I wouldn't have fucked you in front of a room full of people, would I, Dolcezza? She shivers. Like she's remembering the night we descended into the basement of the rock and gave in to our basest desires. It wasn't such a long way for me to fall from innocence. I've been a depraved bastard for a long time now. But for Silver, that fall must have felt like skydiving without a fucking parachute. Her eyes are feverish, her cheeks flushed when she pulls back and looks up at me. I'm addicted to the sight of Silver when she's turned on. The hitch of her breath in her throat, and the way she licks at her lips like she'd suddenly kill a man for a glass of water makes my dick hard every single time. A second ago, she was afraid of what was going to happen when she took her seat up on the tiny, low stage in the corner of the diner. All it took to distract her and banish her worry was the mention of my hard cock inside her. I really am that fucking good.
You look pleased with yourself.
Silver brushes her fingers through the front of my hair, and it's my turn to shiver now. I lose my shit every time she touches my scalp. I can't help it. I wonder if she knows how utterly powerless I am against her whenever she touches me like this.
This is nothing like fucking me in front of a room full of people, though, she says.
What, you think playing a guitar is scarier than a bunch of people watching you get penetrated? She laughs, blushing deeply. God, my little Silver Parisi. Mine. She has no idea how fucking beautiful she is. She shyly feeds herself a fry, trying to hide from me behind the curtain of her hair.
I laid my body bare for people to see then. She takes a second, thinking. I know it sounds stupid, but when I play, it feels different. I'm laying my soul bare, and that's almost as intimidating as you are, Alessandro Moretti.
With a careful touch, I sweep her hair back behind her ear, removing the shield she put up to disguise her embarrassment. That doesn't sound stupid. It makes sense. You're a fucking legend, though. You make that guitar weep when you play it. People are gonna lose their minds. And, side note, I am not intimidating. I'm misunderstood.
Ha!
She covers her mouth with the back of her hand.
You do know that you terrify people, right?
Only the ones who piss me off.
You nearly made Halliday cry at lunch yesterday.
Yeah, well, she pissed me off. I like Halliday. Sounds like she's dealing with her own shit at home, too. She had a hand in making your life a waking nightmare, though. It's gonna take more than a couple of pieces of cake and a few tears to make up for that.
Should I make her walk barefoot across hot coals?
She raises an eyebrow, the comment a clear dig. She thinks I'm being too hard on her remorseful friend. Silver's still a good person, though. Somehow, against all the odds, she's still trying to see the good in other people, to give them the benefit of the doubt. Whereas I'm more of the opinion that people are dog shit assholes who need to bleed in exchange for a second chance.
She's not Casey, Silver says quietly, dipping a fry into her milkshake. Halliday's softer, not as resilient. If this were Casey trying to worm her way back into my good graces, then it'd be a different story. You know what I think?
Eternally, always, the inside of that beautiful head of yours intrigues the living shit out of me. I'm embarrassed by how much time I spend thinking about what goes on in there. I clear my throat. Sure.
I think you should probably take a leaf out of my book and go a little easier on Xander. He's really trying to make things right with you.
My smile wants to shrivel up and die. The mere mention of Xander Hawkins will have that effect on a guy. But I fix it firmly in place. He's got a thick skin. He can take it.
Probably,
she agrees, leaning her head against my shoulder.
But he'll give up one of these days. He'll stop trying, and then what? I guess you've just got to ask yourself, aside from the fact that he paid someone to try and shank you, and he knew who your father was when you guys met, do you think he really was your friend? If you do, then you should probably forgive him and move on before you lose him altogether.
Silver. Over the next 30 minutes, people filter slowly into the diner. My stomach roils, churning, and I begin to regret joking about throwing up on the stage. Why the hell did I agree to this again? What was I thinking? I've spent the past year trying to convince people not to notice me, not to stare at me, not to draw attention to myself, and now I'm purposefully putting myself front and center, asking the members of Raleigh to do exactly the opposite. This is all Dad's fault. If he hadn't made out like we'd be doing Raleigh some sort of community service by helping Harry, then I'd be curled up on Alex's couch right now, watching television. Alex leads the way across the diner. He sets up my guitar for me, miking it so that the sound will play through the large speakers Harry's set up on either side of the little triangular stage that fits snugly into the corner at the back of the diner. I watch him, my fingers tingling like crazy, adrenaline prickling all over my body. Fuck. I won't be able to play at all if I'm shaking this much. I keep my back to the people taking up their seats in the booths, around the tables and at the counter, trying not to panic every time the bell above the door rings out and someone new arrives. Alex seems completely oblivious to the amount of people who have braved the weather and come out on a work night just to watch us play. He's even and calm as he tells me to sit on a stool and he sets up the mic that I'll be introducing the songs into. I'm seconds away from bursting into tears when he asks me to say something into the mic to test the sound level. He nearly drops the mic when he looks over and sees the state I'm in. Placing his hands on the tops of my arms, he ducks down so that he's level with me.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're really this freaked out? We can walk out of here right now if you like. My place is 30 seconds across the road. We'll be locked inside the apartment and the door will be bolted before anyone even realizes we've made a run for it.
I let out a breathy laugh. Harry will never forgive me. Look at all the people who came. He's going to double his takings tonight.
There really are a lot of people here. They're ordering coffees and hot sandwiches, chattering quietly to one another in their little groups. But their chairs are all turned toward our dark little corner, angled so they can get a better view of the mystery musicians who will be performing here tonight.
Recognize anyone?
Alex mutters, casting an indifferent glance over his shoulder. Slowly, I nod.
Halliday brought her little brother. They're sitting at the counter. Dad's a couple of seats down from them. Why the hell does he look so nervous? He's not the one standing up here on a stage.
His face, anxious though it may be, is reassuring. He's trimmed the beard that was starting to look a little scraggly back to a reasonable length of stubble, and he's wearing a button-down shirt underneath his down jacket, which completely breaks his new, I'll never wear anything smart ever again because your mother can't make me, dress code. A dress code I fully endorse. The dark gray material suits him, though. I'd never tell him to his face, but he actually looks quite dashing. I continue my sweep of the diner, looking for familiar faces.
Harriet Rosenfeld from school's here.
Alex smirks, unraveling a long cable and plugging it into the back of an amp.
Ah, the trumpet player. Aren't you glad you agreed to give me lessons instead of palming me off on her? I could have been playing Revel up here with her tonight.
I didn't agree to give you lessons. You gave me no choice. Oh God, is that?
Alex looks up, following my line of sight, and his hands go still on his guitar.
Yeah, it is,
he clips out.
I haven't spoken to her since she came to the apartment. She's been calling.
On the other side of Harry's, weaving her way through the crowd, Alex's social worker, Maeve, looks like she's trying to find somewhere to sit. She spots a vacant seat at the bar and grabs it quickly, right next to my dad.
Well,
Alex clears his throat. He looks unhappy all of a sudden. Maeve shouldn't be here. To Alex, I'm sure she's an ill omen. She delivered the news that changed his life forever. That must have been so hard for her. It wasn't her fault. Ben's death had absolutely nothing to do with Maeve. But to Alex, every time he looks at her, I'm sure all he hears is her voice saying the words over and over again.
I'm so sorry, Alessandro. Truly, I am. But there's been an accident. It's your brother. Ben. Oh God, I'm so sorry, but Ben's dead.
At the counter, Dad turns and smiles at Maeve, and something uncomfortable twists in my gut.
All right, kids, I think that's it.
Harry appears next to the stage with two Cokes and a couple of glasses of ice for us. I'm one hot second away from asking if he has any tequila, but then I check myself. Harry's old school. He wouldn't serve alcohol to a teenager even if he did have a liquor license. Also, Dad wouldn't approve, and he'd be mad that I'd asked one of his friends such a dumbass question.
I think everyone I invited has arrived, Harry says cheerfully. I'm not sure what you two are planning on playing, but some of the locals have made a few requests. Easy stuff. You know, Eric Clapton, the Eagles. I love Hotel California myself.
Alex pulls a face. I think he's trying to smile, but it's coming across all warped and twisted.
We're not playing Hotel California, Harry.
The old man brushes off Alex's refusal like he saw it coming a mile away.
Okay, no problem. I bet you guys have got it covered. We'll all just sit back and enjoy the show. How about that?
He hurries away and stands behind the counter, not waiting for a response. Alex hands me my guitar, then sits himself down on a stool 3 feet away from mine, putting the strap of his own instrument over his head. He seems a little grim now, as if Maeve's presence has thrown a spanner in the works and destroyed the playful mood he walked in here with.
You ready?
He asks. His eyes are hard as jet when he looks at me, but then they soften.
You're gonna be amazing. I already know you are. Just play. Don't worry about any of them, and I'll do the same, okay?
Taking a shallow, shaky breath, I nod. Okay.
My fingers move to the strings of my guitar, knowing exactly where they need to be without any assistance, and I pause, repeating the same phrase again and again inside my head.
Please don't fuck this up. Please don't fuck this up. Please don't fuck this up.
And then I begin to play. The notes come haltingly at first. My fingers do what they've been doing for years, gliding up and down the frets, my other hand slowly plucking at the strings as they're supposed to.
but I can't seem to move past the intro of the song, pedaling over the same notes, Travis picking the same strings in a loop. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Alex positioning his hands, ready to come in. When I fail to move past the same cycle of notes again, he speaks softly beside me, so only I can hear him.
Respira y basta. It's okay. Just breathe. Show them how bright you shine, mi amore.
The music comes unstuck immediately, my fingers breaking the cycle. I don't even know how it happens, but the sound of Alex's voice is enough. Landslide by Fleetwood Mac flows out of me, the first line of the song already out of my mouth before I even realize that I'm singing. I do not sing, at least not in front of people. Never in front of people. This is something I do by myself, alone, when I'm sure no one can hear me. My father, mom, Max, not even Alex. I've never even hummed in front of him for fear of embarrassing myself. I took my love and I took it down. Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, what am I doing? My own damned fear paralyzed my senses and I just reacted, just did what came naturally. And it's too late now. I can't just stop. I'm on fire, my cheeks burning, my body shrinking, like I might be able to fold in on myself and just disappear. Climbed a mountain and turned around. Just breathe, Silver, just breathe. Alex's words ring in my ears, reminding me to fill my lungs, which is a good thing because I'm about to fall off my chair any second now. I daren't turn my head to look at him. If I do, I won't be able to keep going. He was supposed to join in with me, playing a harmony along with the music, but he never comes in. His guitar remains resolutely silent next to me, and all I can think to myself is, holy fucking shit, what if he thinks I'm the worst thing he's ever heard? Line after line I sing, my voice soft, lacking the power and confidence that bolsters it whenever I'm in the Nova on my own, or in the shower. Still, I hit the notes one after the other, emotion slipping into the lyrics, and before I know it, I'm lost. I'm on a journey with Stevie Nicks. I feel her pain. It's my pain, and it bleeds through as each word leaves my mouth. I dare to look up from the spot on the floor in front of me, the same spot I've been staring at since I slipped up and started to sing. And there, on the other side of Harry's, my dad is on his feet, a hand pressed against his expensive gray button-down shirt that he wore here for me tonight. And he's looking at me like he doesn't even recognize who I am. Oh my God, I've never seen him look so shaken and so proud. My voice cracks, an ache burning in the back of my throat, but I keep on singing, too afraid to stop now. Can I sail through the changing ocean tides? It's as if a spell has been broken when Alex finally begins to play. I almost sob with relief at the sound of his guitar joining in with mine. I don't feel quite so alone with him playing along, and the deeper, earthier texture of the music he plays complements the light brightness of my own. The rest of the song is easy because he's with me every step of the way, every note and every rise and fall in the melody. When I pluck the last string, the song coming to an end, a wave of release comes crashing down over me, and it feels as though a breath I've been holding for a very long time has finally been set free. The crowd gathered inside Harry's sits in silence, staring dumbly at us. They're so quiet you could hear a pin drop. And then, from the counter, a single clap. Dad. He claps again. My eyes meet his, and I can't bear it. I have to look away. It's just too much. All too much. Applause, loud and raucous, erupts inside the diner, the patrons' meals and warm drinks forgotten about as people slap their hands against the tables and stamp their feet against the floor. I nearly have a heart attack when I feel a hand land gently on my shoulder. Alex faces his back to the crowd the way I did earlier, and he whispers into my ear,
"Marry me, Argento."
What? Leaning sideways, I try to look at him, but he places his hand against the side of my face, preventing me from turning. I laugh, too high-pitched, too adrenaline-soaked to react any other way. Very funny. Sit down, Alex. We need to play another song before I lose my nerve. He takes his other hand and places it on my other cheek so that he's cradling my face. Now, He lets me turn to him, away from the crowd, so only I can see his face. His eyes are burning with emotion, fierce and determined. His expression is more serious than I've ever seen it before. A jolt of alarm squeezes at my heart.
Marry me, Argento, he breathes. Say yes to me before I lose my fucking mind. I can't live another fucking second in a world where you haven't promised to spend the rest of your life with me. I fucking can't.
He shakes his head, rubbing his thumbs against my cheekbones, his eyes so bright that he looks a little mad.
Alex. Yes, Argento. God damn it, do it. You've got to say yes.
22. Alex. The last place on Earth a girl should be proposed to is Harry's fucking diner in front of a bunch of strangers. I didn't plan on proposing at all, but the moment Silver opens her mouth and starts to sing, I see her in that music room she talked about, dust motes spiraling on the air, and she's bathed in sunlight, happy and perfect and home. And I want to give her the dream life she painted on the cabin so badly that it actually fucking hurts. People often wonder how they'd react in a war-type situation when gunfire's ripping through the air and shells are exploding all around them, shaking the ground beneath them. Will they fall apart, or will all of that chaos galvanize them? I've never had to wonder that. I know war. I've lived through it nearly every day of my life. I'm used to the sky falling down and the ground renting open where I'm about to place my feet. I've never let the chaos and the calamity get the better of me. Love, on the other hand? Ha! It's taken love to finally break me. I never could have seen Silver coming. There was no warning, no shot across the bow. If there had been, I could have braced myself for what was right around the corner, but instead she took me out like a goddamn sidewinder missile, blowing a crater in my chest a mile wide. There's no surviving her. I know that much. When the first line of Landslide came out of her mouth and the sweet sound of her lilting voice hit my ears, it was like a bomb going off in my soul. And any lingering thoughts I might have had about waiting to ask her this question went up in smoke. It took all of my willpower not to stop her from playing halfway through the song so I could drop down on my knees and beg her to be mine right then and there. Yes, Sargento, goddammit, do it. You've got to say yes. I know how crazy I sound. I also know that Harry's is perhaps the least romantic place in Washington, and this should be happening somewhere far, far nicer. And there should be a ring, and a million other things should be different. And I should have been a better guy and asked Cameron for permission first. Wait, God, what year is this? Do men still have to ask for permission to propose? Cameron's gonna fucking kill me. Why hasn't she said anything yet? I search Silver's face, looking for some clue that might tell me what she's thinking. Her expression is so stunned, though, that I have no idea what she's going to say. My heart is a tense fist, refusing to beat.
Timing's pretty spectacular, Moretti, she whispers.
Behind us, the crowd's starting to get restless. They've begun talking amongst themselves, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I need a goddamn moment. I need three. I need for Silver to give me an answer before my head fucking explodes. Argento, I growl. Are you afraid of a life with me?
No.
Are you afraid of what people will say? She shakes her head, sucking her bottom lip into her mouth. Are you afraid of loving me? She's unyielding when she shakes her head again, firm and sure of herself.
No, Alex, I could never be afraid of that.
I fight to keep my voice level when I ask my final question. Then what are you afraid of? Her eyes, pale and cool, like the crisp sky over Lake Cushman, are so clear and brilliant as she looks up at me. My stupid heart gives one painful, urgent squeeze, my ribs pinching like I'm being crushed inside a vise, and finally she answers.
I'm not afraid of anything. Alessandro Moretti, I'm happy. I'm happy because I'm going to be your wife.
I figured I'd be able to breathe again if she said yes, but she hasn't actually said yes yet. I close my eyes, desperately trying to keep my shit together. Silver, tell me. Say the actual words. I need to hear them out loud right fucking now.
Yes, she whispers. Yes, of course I'll marry you.
Holy fuck. All of the frantic, nervous energy pours out of me like water spilling through my fingers. She said yes. She actually said yes. I open my eyes, leaning my forehead against hers, and she reaches up, holding me by the wrists. A powerful, delirious electricity passes through us and the room falls away. I forget that all my life, all I've known is war. In this moment, with time standing still and everything changing, everything evolving, everything silver, all I know is peace.
Kids, I know I'm not exactly paying you or anything, but do you think we might be able to get another couple of songs?
Harry asks, hovering by the front of the stage.
People are starting to get antsy, and we've run out of the Philly cheesesteak. If we could distract folk for a few minutes while Cliff runs to the store for some supplies, I sure would be really grateful.
Because she's a better person than I am, Silver eventually drags her gaze away from my face to look at the poor bastard. I, on the other hand, continue to stare at her like she's the answer to every single question I've ever fucking asked.
Sure, Harry. Sorry, we just got a little sidetracked,
she says. I reiterate, I like Harry. He's a genuinely good guy. But right now, I could open hand slap him for interrupting us. All I want to do is pick Silver up and carry her out of here, away from all the noise and the prying eyes that are boring into my back. I don't want to share her. I don't want to share this moment.
Just half an hour,
she tells me, as if she can read my mind and knows how badly I suddenly need us to get the fuck out of here.
30 minutes, and we'll make our excuses.
Too long, I rumble, shaking my head.
Too bad.
She whispers, smiling, her eyes alive with excitement.
Don't worry. The second we're done playing, I'll drag you out of here and across the road myself.
Grudgingly, I let her go and sit my ass back down on my stool. The people in the crowd fall quiet, their conversations petering out as they realize we're about to start playing again. This time, I don't wait for Silver to strum her guitar. I get in there first with the opening chords of a song that isn't on our set list. I don't even know if she knows the song, but I want her to hear it. I want her to hear me sing, because she isn't the only one who's been hiding her voice. Just like Dermot Kennedy's, my voice is rocky, deep, and bottomless, a little raspy and rough around the edges. I belt out power over me, the emotion present, right where it needs to be. I'm not a gun at finger-picking like Silver, but this was a piece of music I mastered a long time ago. My fingers skip over the strings, the music flowing out of me like I've just opened up the veins at my wrist, and the words are pouring out of me like my very own life force. Silver sits still like I did when she played Landslide, her guitar resting mute on her lap. She avoided looking at me when she performed, but I do the exact opposite. I only look at her. Definitely not the best way to connect with an audience, but so fucking what? I don't care about connecting with any of them. Silver is my event horizon, my point of no return. Everything else is just white noise. She's so beautiful, my fucking soul hurts. I don't pause after I'm done with the song. I go straight into the next number on the list we drafted out, needing to keep the moment going, and Silver joins in. We play a run of old numbers that the crowd sings along with, but we remain quiet. For our finale, we play Barton Hollow by the Civil Wars, and by some unspoken agreement, Silver and I sing together, knowing that it's only right. Our voices rising and falling in unison, weaving together perfectly, and the haunting song renders the people in the diner utterly silent. The final discordant note of the song is still ringing out across the diner when I get up, take Silver by hand, abandoning all of our equipment, and I drag her out of the building into the darkness and the night and the rain. And we run. 23. Alex. Silver gasps as I shove her up against my bedroom wall. I'm careful not to lean my weight against her, conscious of her sensitive ribs, but she pulls me closer by the front of my t-shirt, giving me an open-mouthed smile. I'm not that fragile anymore, Moretti. I'm healed up just fine. You can take the gloves off a little. We're both grinning like maniacs, drunk and high and stupid on the fact that I just posed a crazy question and she said yes to it. We don't know what this new accord between us means for our future. No one can know what fate has in store for them for certain, but we both know the pact we just made in the diner is monumental and will change our lives forever. The apartment's filled with a buzzing energy that makes me want to howl at the moon, or tear my clothes off and throw myself into the lake, or jump on my bike, open the throttle, and go faster than the wind. I need so badly right now. I need so many things. I need to feel. I need the adrenaline fizzing in my bloodstream. I need more oxygen than I seem to be able to coax into my lungs. I need Silver, most of all. Only thing I'm concerned about taking off are your clothes. I tell her, get rid of them. Get rid of them all. I want you naked on that bed in 3 seconds or I'm gonna end up tearing through that Billy Joel shirt with my fucking teeth. Silver's perfect mouth is swollen and red from the rough kiss I landed on her the moment we were through the apartment door. With dazed, unfocused eyes, she scans my face, picking over my features in a way that makes me want to tear her pants down, put her over my knee, and spank her bare ass until it's red raw for such blatant insubordination. I growl, the rumble vibrating in the back of my throat, and Silver's pupils dilate even further. Wolf, she accuses, eyeing the tattoo of the wolf on the back of my hand. You're a fucking savage, aren't you? Oh, she has no fucking idea. Not even the first clue. I consider racing outside and howling up at the night sky again, knowing just how good the bite of the cold air will feel on my skin. I choose to stay here, towering over my beautiful, wide-eyed prize instead. Silver, you're gonna scream so hard for me, the whole neighborhood's gonna hear about it. I rub her bottom lip with my thumb, slowly using it to open her mouth. I push it inside, up to the first knuckle, and a dangerously wicked glint flashes in her eye. She's going to bite. I tut under my breath, pretending to disapprove. Only wolves get to bite, and you? You're not a wolf. She hisses, surprised, when I quickly dip down and sink my teeth into her neck, applying just the right amount of pressure to make her squirm. I could be a wolf, she pants. I shake my head, hiding in the crook of her neck so she can't see my teasing smile. You're a kitten, mi amor. A soft, cuddly, gentle kitten. This is so far from the truth. She's as fierce as a wolf, any day of the week, but it's fun to tease her. Oh, you are asking for trouble. She pushes me away, planting her palms against my chest and firmly shoving. It's barely enough force to shift me at all, but I willingly give her a foot, just one. She's still trapped in the circle of my arms, as I rest my hands against the wall above her head, using it to brace myself. I find a lust-filled defiance dancing in her blue eyes. You're lucky I'm feeling forgiving, or I might have shown you just how sharp this kitten's claws are, she informs me. Holy fuck, I want her to show me. A little demonstration would be much appreciated. There'll be time for that later, though. First, I want to make her melt. I want to kiss and lick and knead and palm her until she's pliant and obedient, and then I want to fucking eat her alive. Reckless, I accuse, grabbing one of her tits through her shirt and squeezing possessively. Better think through your words before you start making suggestions like that. I might get carried away. The tip of her pink tongue darts out to wet her lips, and my cock throbs painfully in my pants. She has no idea what she does to me when she performs these seductive little actions. That's why they're so fucking arousing. Lots of women lick their lips, pout, and flutter their eyelashes flirtatiously, running their fingers suggestively across their cleavages. But that kind of sexual assault is gross to me. Way too contrived and obvious. When Silver wets her mouth with the tip of her tongue, she does it because her heart's beating out of her chest, and she's nervous and thinking about me kissing her. And that makes my dick harder than concrete. She's stronger than any girl or woman I've ever met. She's stood in the face of pain and humiliation when others would have been brought to their knees. She has the heart of a lion. She stared down death and refused to quail at the sight of it. And yet with me, she can be vulnerable. We undress each other, ripping clothes over each other's heads as we stumble down the hallway to the bedroom, tripping as we kick out of our shoes. My hands ache, longing to touch her as she shimmies the thin, lacy fabric of her panties down her thighs and lets them drop to the floor. Breathless, I go to her, placing my hands on her hips. She gazes up at me and a surge of desperation punches through me, making my head spin. If someone had told me a year ago that I was going to meet a girl and fall for her so hard that I asked her to marry me within a space of a few months, I'd have laughed in their faces. I'd never have believed it. I'd have immediately regretted my impending rashness ahead of time and done whatever I could to prevent it. I'm not that guy anymore, though. Regret is the furthest thing from my mind. I want everything now. Our future together, our lives, unspooled before us, filled with twists and turns and unexpected surprises. I can't wait to see what happens next. Her hair is so wavy and beautiful in the pale moonlight that floods in through the window. Like porcelain, her bare skin is so smooth and flawless. I feast on the sight of her tits, the heavy curve of them begging me to cup their weight in my hands, and it takes every ounce of patience I possess not to fuck her where she stands. Even with its scars, because of its scars, her body is perfection. It's been abused, beaten, violated, and broken in places, but it's beautiful in every way. Her back holds her upright and strong, unafraid. Her hands held loose by her side are capable of creating the most haunting music. Her eyes, the color of winter morning skies over the Walker Forest, are defiant and proud and brimming over with intelligence. She said yes. She said yes. She said yes. She said yes. On the bed, Argento. As though she's some kind of dream, a figment of my imagination. It feels like if I don't do something to claim her right now and physically anchor her to this reality, she'll evaporate into smoke and I'll lose her forever. Silver sets herself down on top of the duvet, her hair spilling around her head, her coral pink nipples peaked and begging for attention. She reaches out a hand to me, and common sense demands that I run to her instead of walk. The bed dips as I climb up onto the mattress, positioning myself next to Silver. I give myself a second to survey her from the crown of her head to her toes, ravenously devouring every detail of her. Her ribcage rises and falls unevenly, her breath coming in staccato bursts. God, Alex, the way you stare at me makes me feel like I'm burning up. My mouth hitches up in one corner, a pleased rumble building in my chest. I take my index finger, running the tip of it over the flat of Silver's stomach, satisfaction warming me when she shivers at my touch. I trail my solitary finger down, circling her belly button with it, grinding my teeth together as I venture even lower. "You want me to put out the fire?" I ask her. Or should I stoke the flames? I trail my index finger to the left, over the crease where her leg meets her hip, and she bucks in answer, her ass jerking upward off the bed.
"I'll literally scream if you stop,"
she whispers, frustration coloring her words. Her need for me is addicting. Her eyes follow my hand, watching it as it skates across her skin. Her cheeks, a flushed shade of red that seems to glow hotly even in the dim light. I trace my finger lower still, tracing it lightly over the very apex of her thighs now, right where the petite slit of her pussy begins. Normally, I wouldn't give a shit if Silver waxed her pubic hair or let it grow naturally, but I'm glad her skin is bare for tonight at least. I want to see every inch of her. I want to spread her apart and see how the champagne pink of her flesh deepens to darker shades of rose. I want to witness just how turned on she is by the slickness of her cunt. I hold the pad of my thumb against the lips of her pussy, knowing that if I press down a little, guiding my finger a tiny bit lower, she'll yield to me, giving me access, and I'll have her gasping in seconds. I can already feel the small, hard pebble of her clit beneath her skin, swollen, just waiting to be rolled and rubbed until she breaks apart for me. "You want my tongue, Dolcezza? You want me to fuck you with my fingers while I lick you?" Her eyes shutter closed. She lets her head fall back onto the bed, her fingers twitching reflexively, like she needs something to hold on to.
"God, yes. Please, Alex, please."
I lean over her, arching my body over hers, anticipation making my blood surge faster through my veins. She's fucking spectacular. I'm going to take my time over this. I'm going to make her tremble and shake until she can't take it anymore. My tongue makes contact with her skin, just below her belly button, and the clean, lightly floral fragrance of her floods my senses. I try to bite back the harsh snarl that climbs up the back of my throat, hoping to soften the sound, to make sure I don't come across like a wild animal that's about to tear her apart. I fail epically, though. "Open," I demand. "Feet up. Bend your legs. Let your knees fall open. I want unrestricted access."
"Alex,
do it right now or I'll arrange you how I want you myself." She stutters out a shallow moan, but she slowly moves, placing her feet flat against the bed, letting her knees fall out so her pussy is exposed to me, not a part of her hidden from me. Her flesh is just as wet as I'd hoped, pink and plump and beautiful. From the hood of her clit to the opening of her pussy, she's slick, her flesh ready and begging to be licked clean. "I want your cum on my tongue," I growl, nipping the inside of her thigh with my front teeth. "I want you to cum so fucking hard I feel you pulsing around my fingers, Silver. Are you gonna give me what I want?" Her hips buck away from the bed again, her movements urgent and desperate.
Yes, fuck. Oh my God, Alex.
"You need it, don't you? You're desperate for me to make you cum."
Yes.
She pants.
"Please?"
I haven't touched her. I'm so close. She can feel my hot breath on the most intimate, private parts of her body. I can tell by the way her skin has broken out in goosebumps. She reaches her hands down, digging her fingers into the inside of her thighs, like the crescents of her nails gouging into her skin will relieve some of the pressure building between her legs. She whimpers, sounding pained, and my protective, possessive side roars in my ears. "Don't worry, shh, tesoro. It's okay. Ti farò stare bene. Lo prometto." She has no idea what I'm saying, no idea that I'm reassuring her, swearing to take care of her. But she doesn't need to hear me say it. She knows I'm going to do it, no matter what. I take hold of my dick, squeezing the tip, shuddering as a wall of pleasure rocks through me. I allow myself 5 torturously slow strokes before I get onto my knees and I fall between Silver's legs. She cries out, fisting my hair as I sweep my tongue over her, tasting and exploring every part of her. her thighs tightening around my head as she loses control of herself. Focusing on her clit, I get to work, making sure she feels every flick I administer with the tip of my tongue. I use my fingers, pushing one and then two digits inside her, pumping them slowly, bringing her to a boil as her pleasure mounts. I love fucking Silver. Being inside of her is a religious experience. This feels better, though. Being selfless, doing something purely for her and only her, fills me with a deep sense of gratification that can't be beaten. Nothing in this life brings me more pleasure than making her come with my fingers in my mouth. Nothing. She shakes, vibrating so hard I almost have to hold her down on the bed. With her thighs still gripping my head, I can hear my pulse churning in my own ears. Fuck. The taste of her, the smell of her, the frantic way she angles herself up to me, giving me access to her pussy. It fucking turns me on more than I can stand. I rock into the mattress, unable to stop myself, my dick throbbing as I drive it up into the twisted bedsheets, and it feels so good that I groan, my breath heavy into Silver's thigh. Again, I roll my hips, the tip of my erection rubbing against the bed, trapped between my body and the mattress, and a mindless, depraved animal urge tells me to keep going. I stop myself, forcing myself to hold back, but only just. God, I need her. I need her so fucking bad. Sliding my fingers into her, I stroke up and toward myself in a beckoning motion, searching for the one spot inside her that will make her fucking implode. It doesn't take long to find it. I brace, locking my arm around Silver, making sure I have a tight hold on her, and then I apply the slightest pressure. Oh, oh God, oh God, oh God! Silver's back tries to arch away from the bed, but I have her expertly pinned down, holding her in place. Alex, I'm gonna...